Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West. Issue 19.5. This is our all reviews, comic reviews, reviews of comics, etc.
Reviews!
Yeah! That was not planned, but I like it. Anyway, I'm one of your hosts, Pat, and with me, as always, is...
Natman!
And Cat not in a hat for once. Yes. It's sitting there, and I'm looking at it pretty longingly, though.
Alright, well, with that out of the way, let's get right into it. So, Nat, what do you have for us this week?
I've got a rare miss by Tom King, actually. It's a Batman number 41. It's,
gasp.
I mean, I know.
I'm a little hurt right now.
Is it boring? Like, it's an intro story to a new story arc that I don't care about. It's especially boring. Coming off of the awesome dichotomy of Batman, Wonder Woman, and Catwoman, and that little mini arc that was around. This is just Poison Ivy being too big. Like, it's going too big with the character. It's affecting everybody in the DC universe. Well, she's like, it seems as if she's connecting to the Green. Uh-huh. So she's manipulating everyone to say that they love her. So it's like all of the world is in love with Poison Ivy except for Catwoman and Batman.
Just go back to Harley Quinn comics.
I don't know if... I'm sure this is going to go somewhere because Tom King has not let me down, but...
See, to me that kind of sounds a little intriguing because I, for one, have always been a huge fan of Poison Ivy, even though she's always such a side character. And I don't know, like, it...
I'm fans of versions of Poison Ivy. I do like her relationship with Harley.
Yeah.
I just... It's too powerful. Like, what do you do after that? And I think that's...
But that's kind of why I think, like... I don't know. Like, she's so underdone all the time. Like, somebody who can control all plant life. Like, it... Like, how does she not just destroy Batman at any moment that she wants to? Like, how does she not destroy anyone at any moment that she wants to?
That's
like perfect. Like, it's like, I feel like she's so under, like unless there's a specific reason, I don't see why she's not one of the most powerful people in the DC universe.
And maybe that'll be the final exploration of the story, is like, that's really where she should be positioned, and she should be like on the same level as Swamp Thing. But I think part of this for me too is I'm still just not a fan of Mikhail Janine. That art style that he has is, it works. Everything is super competent and well detailed.
It's really hard for me because every time I think of Poison Ivy, I just think of her in the animated series. Yeah. So I get anything else but that, and I'm like, that's not Poison Ivy!
There's two versions of the character that I'm like really always hook onto is the animated series and then Batman Arkham Asylum. Like, where she is a very heavily powered character, but she has been, you know, locked into the asylum to the point where she basically has her home or her own, like,
stasis bubble.
Yeah, I can't think of the term all of a sudden, but like, where, like,
cocoon?
No, like a whole botanical area.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, greenhouse?
Seems too simplified.
Okay.
Maybe greenhouse is what I was looking for.
All right.
Anyway, I'll move on to Atlas and Axis number 2 by Powell. I thought this was a kid's book. It's not. It's really not.
Especially from that one scene you showed me.
Holy shit, a dog skin rug and then one dog turning on the wolves and lopping off its limbs.
What?
This is intense. This is beautiful and it's wonderful storytelling. And it's this awesome dichotomy of like, it's very similar to Bone, where that's an adventure story that's comedic and people falling into a happenstance adventure.
Mm-hmm.
But the stakes are real. Like, this is not a joke. These two dogs are, you know, fighting for their lives, and most of the friends that they've had are dead. So it's their continuing adventure. I don't know where this is going to go, but I loved it. It reminds me of a more even like adult Bone, but but yeah, really cool read. Don't give it to the kiddos.
<Uh-oh>.
Yeah, and when the trade comes out, it's definitely going to be one that's not going to be filed by anybody else but me, so it gets in the right place. And then my last solo review here is Deathbed Number One. This is from Joshua Williamson with art by Riley Rosmo and colors by Ivan Placencio, which is weird because I've never seen him credited as Ivan. It's always Efko.
Does what he wants.
Well, yeah, I call yourself Efko, right? I don't know
what that means. That's a dope name.
Right? FCO, too. Like, there's no...
Oh, nice. Efko. Yeah.
But yeah, so this is... I've been presenting this to people as... the Dos Equis commercials guy, the most interesting man in the mm-hmm. world. What if he was like a real person who fought demons and like magical entities, and this is him on his deathbed telling his story to the world? Like, it is
funny.
It's really, really cool. And it's from the perspective. Right, exactly. It's from the perspective of a writer who works for magazines. So she's been specifically called out by him to write this. And then shit goes absolutely crazy and there's demons and, the naked man with his utility belt. And that machine guns.
I'm not even a dude, and I saw that page. I'm like, he should cover that. That's dangerous.
Yeah, seriously. And he's super nonchalant about it. And then when he finally does get dressed, he looks like a character from like a 1950s serial. Like,
yeah,
it's with you know the domino mask and everything.
In the back of my mind, I'm like, take your pants back off. You don't look right.
This was an amazing debut, and I will. Pretty much read anything Riley Rosmo does at this point. My question is, where the hell is this going? And is this one acid trip and none of it's actually real? Like, I'm just really curious if this is actually the real story of someone or if this is a farce, a drug trip. So, really cool, awesome pickup if you can find it. Turned out to be a sleeper hit that people were, well, sleeping on. They were sleeping on the deathbed.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, did
Whoa.
You just hear the door shut? I think I walked out.
Yeah, quickly, take us out
no,
of here.
No, you're right.
Oh, you're up. Yeah. Okay. So I just got so distracted. I don't even know what's happening. All right, so I guess I'll start us off with Lockjaw Number One. I forget where the creative team is listed here.
Sketches in the back.
Written by Daniel Kibblesmith, which is a pretty...
Kibblesmith? He's writing a story about a dog, and his name is Kibble?
Yeah, K-I-B-B-L-E Smith. Kibblesmith. I know, right?
I hope everybody else out there is laughing with yes. me in my head right now.
Yeah. And, art by Carlos Villa. You're yeah.
Welcome. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
So this, I was not... I haven't really been, like, too big of, like, an Inhumans proper mm-hmm. fan. This right here is exactly kind of what you'd want from the story about a teleporting dog. What does the dog do during the day while the owners are busy? Like, we have Medusa and Black Bolt in the bedroom, and then Lockjaw leaves to Karnak. There's just a great little dialogue, and he's like, I know everything's weakness. I don't know why you're trying this, and he just pours milk into a giant dog bowl. And then, yeah, we get... and then it quickly turns to the story of D-Man, who is an old, washed-up... it looks like secondary or tertiary sort of superhero from back in, like, Captain America's heyday.
Okay.
So I have no idea what his story is other than that he had superpowers and now he does not have superpowers.
Huh.
And basically he's been literally reduced to a trivia question on a Jeopardy-esque game show that he's watching.
Nice. That's probably not.
And
probably didn't hurt his feelings.
Also, he, God, this is just like one of the best, like, sort of like, I think like gay reveals, I guess. I know that's like a stupid way to put that, but he's
now I'm interested.
Mentioning, he's talking to like this old woman who lives in his apartment building, and, just this dialogue exchange is amazing. She says, "Where is your better half these days, Dennis? I must have missed him when you left for work." And D-Man replies, "Actually, I he and I, Chris and I, broke up a while ago. And the old woman replies, oh, dear, 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 that is a shame. You guys are such nice gays, too. Not like those scary gays on the cable news.
That's awesome. And I want that said to me.
I know, right? That's just, like, a... just such great, like, dialogue exchange there.
Right.
And then we just have, like, Lockjaw running through the park and coming out. And then we have alien cyborg gerbils attacking.
Because why not?
Because why not? And then,
well,
like,
the news is you just have to, like, hold out for 2 years and they'll die.
Yeah, basically. And then, it ends with them going to, like, the set. And so D-Man basically is, like, very depressed. And I think that this is going to be a sort of, like, kickstart in him. Like, he's... even though Lockjaw's the main character, it looks like D-Man is going to be the emotional arc that you can't really have with a dog who's always a good boy. Right. As explicitly mentioned in the pay... or in the page at the end with Daniel Kibblesmith writing about this. First line is, Lockjaw is a good boy, the end. And so, yeah.
That's awesome.
It is mentioned very much throughout that he is a good boy, a very good boy. With that being said, the end. I have Punk's Not Dead, number one by IDW. Once again, I'm going to struggle really quickly to find the creative page. Written by David Barnett and art by Martin Simmons with a D. It's an interesting last name. I didn't really know. I picked this up just because the word punk was in the cover. And this is a really interesting. I have no idea. I mean, I kind of have an idea where this is going. Basically, the premise is it's this teenage kid. His mom is basically manipulates him for, like, those shitty, like reality shows where it's like, this kid is on drugs and is gay, and, like, nah, this mom has to deal with it. And, like,
Dr. Phil!
Yeah, basically Dr. Phil. And, like, but he's not, his mom just, like, basically drags him on as, like, an actor just to get money and stuff. And then he discovers the ghost of Sid Vicious of the Sex Pistols. And for some reason is the only person that can see him. And he's basically like a wimpy kid, gets bullied in school. So we'll see where this goes with punk rock. Oh, also there's like a weird like extra normal affairs British bureaucracy office involved somehow. Classic England. Just having a bureaucracy for everything. And, so, yeah, I don't really know what to say about it. It was interesting. I'd give it a hard 5. Like, straight down the middle. Could have been better, could have been worse.
Huh. Just kind of hanging out in the corner.
Yeah, just kind of hanging out there. And then next I have Twisted Romance, number 3 of 4, written by Clara Speed McNeil and art by Alex DeCampi. Not a fan at all. This one, both the stories in it were hard sci-fi, and it was not, I feel like, as much as I love sci-fi stories, I feel like world building as well as romance building in a short story, like a very short story, is just too ambitious.
Gotcha.
The initial story, it was not bad. It was just taking on way too much and way too short of a time. Like, this is something that should have been a mini series, at least.
Okay.
Trying to build like a whole like intergalactic federation as well as a romantic relationship between like a Starfleet captain and like an intergalactic space pirate, basically. It was ambitious, just too much so for the space that it had. And then the backup story, I don't even fucking know what's going on in this. It's like future space animals that, you know, are in love for some reason. I don't fucking know. I don't care. So Twisted Romance for 3 for me was a resounding meh.
Kind of like the first issue.
Kind of like the... I would say, yeah, kind of like the first issue. It was better than the first story was better than the first issue. The backup story was way worse than the first issue. And so all around they were probably about even, honestly. I don't know.
I mean, I guess I'll follow that up with Twisted Romance number 4, which, to start out, I'd like to point out, I actually read it backwards.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I read this one.
Oh, did you read the backup story
first?
Yeah,
I read the backup story first, which I was like, what the f- I don't get this, and I don't want to get this. So I flipped it over, and I read the actual first story, and it was actually very interesting. It kind of stuck with me just because of all the imagery in it. So it's about a little girl who is a princess, and she doesn't want to be a princess, I guess. She runs away, and she meets a snake, and she kisses the snake, and the snake becomes a dragon. And
naturally, when you see a snake, you kiss it.
Oh, yeah.
I love snakes.
I just love snakes. God, like, it's so much.
I mean, there's a whole reason behind it. It's very terse. But the dragon's like, I want you to be my treasure. So she ends up spending the rest of her life in a cage being the treasure, and she says it's very hard being a treasure. And like there's one part where she's in this cage and the dragon is literally eating a unicorn. If that doesn't stand for I am literally eating your dreams right now, I don't really know what does.
I don't mind you, it looks beautiful.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. No, it's really pretty and horrifying all at the same time. The thing is, this is definitely about an emotionally abusive relationship. It's definitely, you can definitely see it. The one thing that's very prevalent in this is the princess lets you know how she views herself. She's a very average looking girl. And the dragon's like, oh, you're so charming and so beautiful, and worms his way in, making her believe, you know, that he loves her. And she's like, you know, he doesn't hit me or anything. He's just, you know, kind of mean. And it's just like typical emotional abusive things. And so you kind of come to the end of this story where she finally, like, he doesn't hurt her, he hurts somebody else near her. Like, she has a friend that's a spider. But it's like, it's not that bad. He doesn't hit her. It's if she just behaves, you know. It's pretty cutting. Like, there's one point where she's like, if I just did this correctly, we could go back to being normal and going outside and loving each other like normal. And the thing is you just see these emotionally abusive tendencies with a dragon, basically. It says, like, at one point she does something he doesn't like, and she's like, I was going to take you outside tomorrow, and just blaming her. Jesus. But you had to go and do this. And so at one point, like, he hurts her friend, and she unlocks, because the spider brings her a key to, so she can leave.
Gotcha.
And she actually opens it, and it's cutting, man.
Did you like the story, or...?
I think it was a very good story, and the way...
I guess maybe like is a bad word. Did you think it was a well-made story? Yes.
Though the metaphor of it is very interesting, especially at the end when she finally gets away. I didn't really care for the ending. I think, honestly...
Well, don't spoil it, because I actually do want to read these two.
I think it should have ended at one part. Okay. Instead, it kind of continued forward, which I didn't much care for, but I kind of see why they did it the way they did. As for the second story in it, neat, I guess.
Neat.
I read it and I was like, okay, the best I got from it is don't judge people and what they do with their lives. Shut the hell up and deal with your own shit.
I have to talk about this, like, Twisted Romance as a core concept. It seemed really cool on the surface that it was going to be... You know, sort of takes on...
It seems like it's a lot of hit and misses from what you got. Yeah, what I'm seeing.
It seemed like they're so vastly different from one another that even though they're on the theme of non-traditional romance or non-traditional love, like, it just doesn't seem like it worked.
You know, I think I love the idea of short stories. That's like... I feel like comics as a genre is like the last bastion of short stories in literature.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like even within like single issues, that was such an amazing idea to have short stories. And in different forms too, like the fact that there was even like prose short stories in it. Like, part of me when I first saw that was like, oh my god, they're even just including like a real short story in this.
See, and that was my
and like Image Comics, like your short stories within the comics, like I'm thinking like the Bitch Planet 3-in-1s. Like, so, yeah.
They're so cutting, I can't read them.
Exactly, but they're so well written. That's why I asked if you like, not if you liked it, but if they were well made.
Right.
Well, like, that's what the thing is. That first story was great. The other two, I could give two shits about.
Yeah. But that was the way.
I read the prose one, and it's just like.
I feel like that's the problem with this, is to have three short stories in one, you have to have at least two hits, and most of these were at least two misses.
Mm-hmm. And definitely for that one, it was, I read the third one, and I was like, I flipped back and forth, like, oh, maybe this gives me an idea. No, I didn't, I still don't care
And the fact that all the pros in this, for me, were misses was such a letdown, too.
Yeah, and seeing the second in the pros that I had in this one, I was like...
Yeah, it all felt it felt like Twilight. It felt like Twilight and 50 Shades of Grey, just poorly written, overly.
I wouldn't say that the one that I read was necessarily poorly written. It was just like, in comparison to leaving me with such vivid imagery and such a metaphor to it, like an emotionally abusive relationship. To don't judge people and what they do with your lives. Yeah. Shut the fuck up. I don't know. Maybe if they reordered them differently, it would have been a little bit better, but I might have stopped reading.
Great concept, but maybe didn't work in how it was executed.
Yeah. Keep trying Image.
Yeah, like, definitely. Like, I would be invested in another anthology on a theme, but I just...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Creators were interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Just
keep creating cutting stories. Bitch Planet I can't read because it cuts way too deep, but...
Yeah.
But
yeah, I feel like this is an interesting... Like, that would be an interesting thing for Image to do, but don't do it all, like, week to week. Like, spread it out.
Yeah, I think make that might have helped a little
Image,
bit.
Image, one of the reasons I love you is because you're not, like, afraid to be like, yeah, this is on hiatus for, like, 6 months. But this is, like, one of the first things where you're like, we're going to do one every week because it's February and romance.
Yeah.
And I think that was kind of where it went wrong, is... just, like, actually trying to pump something out for the sake of an event.
Well, I imagine it was probably spread out in terms of its writing to set for a time period.
I think prose... prose isn't easier to write, but it doesn't... I can print this, whereas I still have to do artwork for this, so...
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't write all the time, so... and then the other two I have, Raven Daughter of Darkness. Neat. And that meme is like, I don't know, I hope everybody heard the sarcasm, maybe it tickled their ears a little bit when they listened to it, but I legitimately do not give a flying fuck. Like, everything is so forced in this, and it's just, I'm sad about it, because I figured this is going to be something great. Raven's always been pretty good, and now I'm like, what is this shit?
That sucks.
It does suck. It sucks pretty hard damn core. Like... I just watched something the other day about her powers, and you just see how forced you just see how forced it is them trying to explain her powers to a new audience, and I'm like,
but that's one of the things that's great about Raven, is that you don't know all of her powers and stuff. You know, I always talk shit about Teen Titan Go, but that's a great scene in it when she's like listing off her powers, and then it's like 6 hours later, and she's still just like, I can boil water, I can make things levitate, I can do all these things. And
I mean, like, it's they're trying to make you give a shit about the what is it, Azura or whatever? The character she runs into with the giant eyes.
Oh.
The character nobody knows about. They're trying to make me give a shit about a character I have no connection to, except she's very odd-looking and weirds me out a little bit.
Which you can totally do.
Yeah.
But they did it completely wrong.
But you can't force it.
And that's what they're trying to do. And I'm just like, I don't...
You know? Think about...
In the back of my mind, I'm like, you have one more issue. If I don't see something that's like... And so far, I honestly don't think I'm going to. If I don't see something that's good about this, you're done. Like, we're done. I don't want to read this.
You know,
it's such a forced story, it seems like to me. It's really pretty, don't get me wrong, but it's such a forced story.
Yeah, I'm thinking about Nat and I were talking earlier, or a few days ago, about Red Locust and, like, Champions.
Yeah.
And, like, she only appears for a few pages, and, like, after that, I'm like, give me all the Red right, Locust, exactly. Like, a brand new character. Like, just, and now I'm just, like, yes, I want her forever.
Yeah. It just, none of it was really, and, like, they have this one part in it, too, that's, like, really annoying me. Where it's like Raven by Raven or some shit that she says. I can't even remember what it is precisely, but I'm like, this honestly makes me hate you a little bit.
No, Raven, I love you so much.
She's like, Raven.
Teen Titans will always exist.
Teen Titans, like, Raven is still the Raven in my mind.
I'm enjoying the ads I'm
Raven
getting.
Raven and Beast Boy OTP.
Yeah.
I'm getting, though, for, like, these Earth 1 comics in the middle, that made it a little bit better. Yeah. But
the advertisement
made the comic better. That's bad.
The advertisement made the comic better. The only other time that happens is in Gwenpool.
Right. It's like, why is this here? And then the last one I'll touch on is Gears of War, The Rise of Ram. I think the last one I said it was kind of like a moot point for me, and it wasn't very interesting. And then I read this one, and I was like, well, I might be wrong.
That's good.
I thought it was interesting. In all reality, I remember saying that I want a comic about how the Queen rose to power. I still want that comic, but it's kind of interesting to see how Ram is trying to go into her light. I don't know how either of you, if you've ever played the Gears of War games, but Ram's a fucking monster, man. He scares me.
Is that really why it's Curtis Weeby?
I don't remember. Yes, it looks like it. His last name is the same.
It's interesting. If that's the same, that's the writer of Rat Queens.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, Curtis Weeby.
That's really, like, it's an interesting
pairing.
Yeah,
going from, like, hard sci-fi to hard fantasy.
Well, the thing is, like, the whole point of this comic is Ram is trying to talk the Queen into invading the surface, because he's like, we're dead down here with all the Lambent, which is exactly... So what happens in Gears is they rise to the surface and start attacking surface dwellers because they have Lambent, which are, like, infected zombie kind of things of themselves, except when you kill them, they blow up.
Lampreys?
Lambent.
Lampreys, okay.
What?
And so they're trying to get away from them, because if they get the stuff on them, breathe it in too much, they get infected as well. So they're trying to get away from it and hold their fort down, and they can't do it. And then at one point, he actually sacrifices an area to make a point and say, we need to go to the surface. And it's like, you see his general tactics of how he got where he was, so it was very interesting.
But, interesting.
Yeah, so I liked it. I also really like Gears of War, so.
That's fair.
But...
Yeah, after the Assassin's Creed movie, I kind of, like, refused to read or watch anything that's based on video games.
Honestly, I've read a couple good books, and that might be one of them. So it's interesting to see his rise to power and what he, and kind of, like, his general tactics of sacrificing in order to try and move to and invade the surface and take the surface from the surface dwellers. Yeah.
Fair.
All right, well, we got a little bit of a hit that all of us have read, and it is
pun intended.
Hit Girl number one.
I'm really
by,
just you hear the door close and open. I left.
I got all the puns today. by Mark Millar and Ricardo Lopez Ortiz. This was fucking nuts. This is everything you expect from a Hit Girl story, where she decides she needs a new sidekick, so she goes to Colombia and finds, you know,
ex-drug dealing mercenary.
Yeah, mercenary murderer, you know, like, yeah, this is nuts. I don't know how unstable Hit Girl actually is, but she seems pretty unstable, hallucinating her dad.
Oh my god, I just noticed when, like, the part in here, I didn't really look too closely.
Oh yeah,
the actual
bits,
ligaments really. And pieces.
Yeah, the art in this is fantastic. It is really, it is heavily manga inspired, and
how I didn't notice that is still upsetting me.
Super kinetic. The violence is just—it's candy-coated violence, where it's just, you know, you see the jawline of somebody who gets chopped in half flying around.
Yeah, she blows the top half off of somebody's body. And then there's a panel of her dabbing as blood squirts out.
It literally
says squirt. Yeah. Wow.
And the bottom portion of his spinal column.
Yeah. Oh, and the kill room with that sign has the BFG 9000 from Doom in it. It has the Buster Sword from Final Fantasy VII.
Fantasy, yeah, I saw that.
I think that's Ash's chainsaw hand attachment.
Oh, yeah.
That might be sense. Excalibur. There's definitely Death's Scythe.
All of the things.
My favorite part is how the
I was looking for the RoboCop gun.
But how the, yeah,
I was looking
how
for
the four up top
aliens
has all the explosives.
Yeah.
There's a little beanbag chair in there.
Aside from the violence, like, I think it's an interesting, like, sort of emotional arc that's going on here, I guess you could call it, where Hit Girl is kind of becoming her father.
Yeah.
In a way, like, which, of course, like, I can only hear Nicolas Cage's voice
right
in this now. but, like, her dad was basically, like, a psychopath with
sociopath
with schizophrenic tendencies,
yep.
And now she's becoming a schizophrenic sociopath. She doesn't care about human lives,
right.
Like, she sees other people as basically just like pawns to fit into like her. She doesn't actually care about her two sidekicks. She just feels like she has to have a sidekick,
yep.
So she picks two people.
Although she does make a reference to the fact that maybe she should go solo, like Batman in the Nolan movies, because those were the best.
Then she's just kind of losing her shit, basically like her dad was.
Yep. It's really weird, too. Like, I think she's still meant to be teenage years, like 16-ish, 16, 17 in this. And,
I mean,
yeah.
She's literally wearing a lock that says LOL on it.
Yeah.
So
this is dark.
Maybe it stands for Locks of Laughs. No cat stay.
I'm just like thinking of myself right now and how much I'm about to act like my own cat, where I just like turn away and dramatically exit the room.
This is an interesting thing for me, is like, I don't know who to recommend this to, because I really love the art like so much. And, like, how, like, this is so over the top that
yes.
I enjoy reading it, but I just don't know if I can be like, this is good.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not clean enough of a statement to say that.
Is it one of those things that it's a certain audience you would recommend it to?
Yeah, probably. I'd be like, you gotta flip through it first. If you're not, like, mm-hmm. enjoying what you're flipping through, then don't even attempt to read it.
Yeah, because it has, like, the cartoony style of somebody that would, like,
with so much
stuff
blood.
Like cartoony, but it has the very, like, pulpy, pun intended there, like,
yeah.
action and gore that somebody of, like, a grittier title would enjoy
right,
reading.
Like, yeah. It's not as grounded as Kick-Ass is.
Yeah.
It's much more
It's kind
extreme.
Of like for somebody who would, like, really likes Borderlands.
Yeah. That's
like,
oh my god, that makes complete sense.
Yeah. Like, cartoony, but also overly violent at the same time.
Tiny Tina. Enough said. If you like Tiny Tina,
yeah.
you like Hit Girl.
Basically.
So, you got another thing over here, Pat?
Yeah, I guess quickly, I want to touch on Black Panther Annual Number 1. Written by,
three people.
Christopher
Priest.
Christopher Priest, yeah. I don't know why I was thinking that. Don McGregor and Reggie Hedlund, with art by Mike Perkins, Daniel Acuna, and
Woo-hoo.
Ken Lashley, in that order. This was really interesting. This is some really interesting arcs here happening. Really nothing, like, exciting, I guess I should say. If I was just explaining this to somebody, unless I basically just told them, like, beat by beat what the stories were,
yeah,
then it's not, like, the first story is such an interesting concept, but you kind of have to read the whole thing
mm-hmm.
to really care. Same with, like, the second story. And it, the third story I really want to touch on, just because, like, it basically takes place in the future with T'Challa talking to his granddaughter, and she's like, basically, like, granddaddy,
I'm assuming she's
T'Challa.
The smartest person in Wakanda.
Maybe the world, and
yeah.
probably, like,
yeah.
she's like, basically, like, granddaddy, tell me how Wakanda took over the world.
Yep.
And not actually literally taking over the world, but basically, like, due to their, like, technological outreach, and then T'Challa marries Storm, so they're, like, technologically the leaders, and then, like, Storm and her children take over, like, the Xavier School for Mutants,
yeah,
and all that stuff, and then they build another one in Wakanda. And now, like, I'm just saying, like, if we can have that story instead of any of these X-Men titles, like, X-Men Next Generation, like,
whatever, Storm, it could be X-Men
and,
Wakanda.
Like, Storm and T'Challa's, like,
I
children.
I would totally read X-Men Wakanda.
I would read that so hard. Like, Storm and T'Challa's children leading Charles Xavier Wakanda campus.
That's amazing.
I would read that so hard.
The Xavier's Institute of Wakanda?
Yeah, the Xavier's Institute of Wakanda. That would be amazing. I would love that. We have, like, one of T'Challa's children being married off to Namor's daughter. Also, we have, like, it's not really, like, them literally taking over the world with guns and, like, Black Panthers. It's basically them culturally taking over the world, which is what is happening right now,
yeah,
in media. I think if any time is ripe for Wakanda to take over the Marvel Universe, it would be now. Why not have Wakanda as the lead in the world now that they've exposed themselves instead of the US or Europe?
That would, like, be really cool. That's
like, it honestly makes more sense to have Wakanda as basically, like, the New York and London of the Marvel Earth.
Yeah.
So I love that just because this idea is so amazing to me.
This was a really great annual, in my opinion, because it did exactly what you want an annual to do, and it's to pay homage to the creators that have come before.
Mm-hmm.
And it all of those writers are writers who have had runs on Black Panther before.
And the fact that the three stars are, like, a past, present, and future,
yep,
of the character, it's like, yeah.
Yep. And so in the second story, Daniel Acuña, being the artist, is actually going to be the ongoing artist on the book with Ta-Nehisi Coates when the issue number one, the sort of pseudo-fresh start launch, happens. So, like you said, the present.
Yeah,
you know,
the,
like,
present. Even though that story was a little bit more of the past.
The middle
one. Yeah, the middle one. I guess in this, it would go present, past, future.
Was that dealing with a modern Ross in the first one? It's a fun issue.
I think so. Maybe I'm getting those confused. Either way.
Yeah.
Past, present,
really
and future.
Cool.
More Black Panther!
More Black Panther!
So I grabbed issue number 170, and I mean, it's not, like, there's a big battle. I don't really know what's going on. The beginning part kind of helped me understand a little bit of what was happening. But I will say the first page when I was reading it, it's like, your problem is the, and it's talking about basically some dude just not wanting to deal with the fact that Wakanda in his mind has become too Western, time to flip it on its head.
Mm-hmm.
And, the other thing that I thought it was interesting, the battle was a little nuts and I lost some things at some points because I'm like, there's things and explosions and sand people.
Yeah, and then, like, after you.
And then
like,
Storm comes through and she's like, yet again, the damsel must rescue her champion. May it always be thus. And I'm like, that's right. Storm came to the rescue, bitches.
Yeah.
That's what you gotta love about, like, T'Challa, like, as a character. Like, when Storm comes and rescues him and makes, like, a line about that,
yeah,
he's always like, yeah, no, I know exactly, like,
you should keep doing
he
that.
Doesn't put on airs at all. He's
no.
never he's never like, no, I can do things too. He's like, yeah, no, you're Storm, like, let's be real here.
Yeah.
He's like, you can whoop my ass.
You're basically a lightning goddess.
Yeah. I think the other part of it is like, not reading it, I will say the ending, Ta-Nehisi Coates did do a good job of, like, mentioning to readers that this big ending reveal was actually, like, something crazy. It didn't hit me as hard because I haven't been reading it, but he did actually give me, like, the hint without drilling it into my face.
Yeah.
That, oh my god, what?
Yeah, having read this since his beginning on this run, I'm not exactly sure. I might have missed something. I'm not exactly sure what the reveal means, but I do know it's important.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's,
like, the thing is, like, I cared about it, even though I don't know what's happening.
I think the interesting mention there of, like, Wakanda becoming too Western is actually something I saw in a lot of complaints in the letters page, especially from the first arc, was people like, Wakanda's great because of these traditional African ideas, like monarchy and stuff, and then, like, the fact that the first arc deals with Wakanda becoming a democracy, people were like, that seems like it's, like, throwing this under the bus, and Ta-Nehisi was very quick to be like, actually, democracy was started in Africa, and,
I just found it really interesting at the end portion of, like, the beginning of it, saying, you know, talking about dualities, and saying how this is, have you ever considered that your gods got bored with you? It's like, fuck!
Yeah. Yeah, not that your gods love you or hate you, but that your They're gods bored just don't with you. Care.
So, are we running a little long? Do we need to move towards...
We've still got some time here if you want to make a couple quick hits before our last that. One.
So, Batman, Sins of the Father. Cool. I can't say I cared for this, and it might just be because I kind of mentioned this, is it doesn't feel like Batman. Turns out Thomas Wayne was a crazy bastard, and now Batman's making up for it as Bruce Wayne and Batman, I guess. And I don't know. I didn't like the character designs for quite a few different characters. I honestly can say I didn't really care for how Batman looked, and I didn't really care for how Alfred looked.
So not going forward with it, I can assume.
I'll try one more time, but I don't think it's going to get any better, to be honest, because it fell very flat with me.
Alright, well, do you got anything good for us, or just more Maz?
I mean, for me, the Fantastic Four! I mean, the Terrifics! I'd have to say Plastic Man's a pretty good comedic relief. I enjoyed him turning into Batman at one point.
Yes.
And you saw the shadow in the back.
I liked the fact that they were inside of him and he was talking as
as himself and then turned into Batman.
Right, yeah, that's...
He's a pretty great comedic relief.
So we should talk about this. The Terrifics is a new part of the New Age of Heroes from DC. It's written by Ivan Reis and Jeff Lemire. And Ivan Reis is also in your pencil.
Jeff Lemire writes it? Yeah. Okay, I might actually have to pick this up.
Because the big line in the, or the big push for this line is that it's artist-driven. So the artists are also...
It's pretty, it was pretty interesting. I didn't dislike it. It was just one of those stories of I don't really know what's going on, probably because I haven't read Metal all the way through, but it's pretty interesting, and I enjoyed Plastic Man. He was pretty great comedic relief, so I mean, the final mention that I've got is Mira, Queen of Atlantis, and I liked it, but I also haven't been reading Aquaman, so I don't really know if, and I've never really read Aquaman either, so that might be why I have a different perception of it.
I thought it was boring.
Really?
I was just like, I was bored with the story. It was, you build a Mara story, and I thought maybe we'd get like her origin story or something that was her on a solo adventure, but instead we're getting her pining after trying to go home, and then it's dealing with Ocean Master. I'm like, you're just going to use Ocean Master as the villain of the story.
That might be why it's different for me, because I don't read Aquaman.
Gotcha. I also
and I've never really gotten into Aquaman very much. So.
I look at the cover, too, and I wish Nicola Scott was drawing the book.
Like, yeah, I will say is the artwork inside, I was kind of like, huh, the cover's pretty dope. What happened in here?
Yeah.
Why didn't she use the same artist?
Yeah, even the variant cover, it's just... Yeah. I don't know. This just didn't do it for me.
As far as I'm concerned, like, I've never read Aquaman, but, like, I don't know.
I'm excited for the Aquaman movie.
Yeah, I'm gonna see that.
I think
that,
the biggest part,
like,
to this is just the fact that it looks like it's painting the picture of trying to get it to where she doesn't want to be, I think the end of it, and it's probably going to be a very predictable ending of she doesn't want to be queen, so she's going to figure out some shit to not be queen, and they're going to go live happily ever after. I don't fucking know.
All right. So
with all those mess, let's move on to amazing.
Yeah, exactly. So we've got The Brave and the Bold, Batman and Wonder Woman number one, a title I have been touting for, I don't know how long. Since the first announcement on Liam Sharp's Twitter account.
I will start with the one complaint, and it's not even a complaint.
Yeah, this is great.
It's so pretty, follow the story. But it's so pretty, follow the story. But it's so pretty!
Yeah, Liam Sharp is giving his tour de force, not only in the art, but he's the writer of this book.
Yeah.
And I'm just loving seeing the Celtic fairy folk, you know? Like, the whole...
They're fucking creepy, man.
Yeah, the mythology and the relationship of Steve Trevor and...
Oh, I love the Wonder homage Woman. Paid in this to, like, traditional pagan folklore. And yeah. That, like, the gods that exist are not, like, gods like we think of them. Like, they are the tree people. They are the, you know, like, very... traditional paganism is very close to traditional Shintoism.
And I'm sorry, Wonder Woman's freaking beautiful in this. I just, like I said, it's so pretty!
Yeah. But, yeah, they're not, the gods are not, Wonder Woman is, I guess, the one exception, but the gods are not beautiful. They're not, like, ideals of gods.
They're very woodsy and, like, more, like, earth-based, well, I guess is the way you put it. I don't know much about Celtic fairy tales.
Yeah, they're exploring that mythology, mm-hmm. which is very different from, like, the Greek mythology where Wonder Woman is
based. Yeah, exactly. I feel like a quick shout-out to, like, the scene when, what's his name? Cyrenus?
Cyrenus, is that it?
Cyrenus, something like that. I'm very rusty on my Gaelic, but the god of the Celtic god of fertility on Wonder Woman and Steve Trevor's fertility session. Which is like really weird because then Wonder Woman is like, while it would be an honor for you to like watch our thing. with your generous offer, but we will regretfully decline your company at this time.
I know.
I enjoy how politely she's like, please don't fucking watch.
I love, like, she's so casual and open with Steve, and then she totally goes into Ambassador Wonder Woman in that conversation.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, that this is now dealing with my job.
Yeah, exactly.
And then she's like, I'm naked, but it's fine.
Right.
Yeah, but she's dealing with a fertility god.
Right, so it's like, doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, he's seen probably every boob ever made.
Right. Well,
That's fair.
I give credit to Liam Sharp, because he was taking a lot of shit for pairing Batman and Wonder Woman, and people were like, no, Batman's with... Catwoman, this is not, you know, something you should do. And he was kind of like, relax, I'm not doing that. And then
they're
like,
a good team together, though.
Well, that's the thing. It's like in the first few pages, it's like, oh yeah, you guys relax.
Yeah,
clearly, right. Her and Steve Trevor are a
thing.
Shut up. Yeah,
yeah. I'm interested to see though where they actually fit in together, because they start from very different sides of this. Story. So I guess the main story is...
I will say this at the very end. Batman just looks like some drunk dude on an acid trip in the middle of... I don't even know where he is.
They're Gotham. They're in some part of Gotham that's being like a dark force from the Celtic gods is sort of like leaking into Gotham City.
Yeah, so from what I understand is the main plot of this is basically like the Celtic pagan version of Mount Olympus, where the fairy folk live, is having some sort of civil war. Yeah, I'm not even going to try to pronounce a lot of the Gaelic in this. Yeah, Tiernanog. Is having some sort of civil unrest, civil war kind of deal, and the bad vibes per se are leaking into the human world.
Those are some messed up fairies, man.
Yeah. Once again, like Celtic mythology, fairies are not the fairies that you think of when you think.
Oh no, I know. Fairies are terrible creatures.
F A R I E S are very nice little Disney characters. F A E R ES, or I forget how, but like the FAE fairies are like not at all. Yeah. It's like the Pan's Labyrinth fairies.
Exactly. It's fairy folk,
I mean, they look like fairies. They kind of look like demons is the best way I can put it, but it's so, like I said, the whole complaint I had with this book is like, that's so pretty. Focused story, but it's pretty.
Yeah. I was gonna say, all in all, like, but if you haven't gotten this yet from listening, both the story and the art.
Even if you have to get it digitally, read it.
This is one of those too that makes me lament the fact that Liam Sharp is not on the main Wonder Woman title again.
Mm.
Like, his art is just so good with that character.
Shake my head when I think sometimes. It's like walking out, shaking my head. It's fine.
Yeah. Come on. If anything, like the first page, and I just like really have to throw this out there, the first page when it opens up, the border work for is just incredible.
Well, there's even it's like four or five pages in when she actually goes into that world, and it's a giant Celtic knot, and within that part of the Celtic knot parts, you see her walking
the
down.
The panel layout is within the knot.
Within
itself.
The knot. Yeah, like, this could be a tattoo on my body, Jesus.
Yeah. And then, like, the leaves blowing in when Cernonis enters, like, blowing throughout. Like, just...
So great.
Just the attention to detail is, like, very, very traditionally Irish.
And this is, like, super... You can tell Liam is paying... This is a labor of love for him. Oh, like, this is the book he's wanted to do.
Yeah, combining two of his great interests, because you can tell, like, just through the artwork, that this, like, Gaelic style is very much something that's near and dear to his heart, because you would not just be able to, like, pick up one name, like, I'm gonna do a Gaelic
style. Right, exactly.
He's like, you know what? I'm bored today. I know!
Yeah. I can just see him at DC being like, can I do my Gaelic Batman now? And they're like, no. Can I do my Gaelic Wonder Woman now? No. Can I do my Gaelic Batman and Wonder Woman now? Okay.
No, like, St. Baddie's Day is coming up, I guess.
Yeah.
That Batmobile's dope, too.
Yeah, just every part
about
this.
Well, that's the thing, is I kind of realized, too, that he actually has the same comic that he... Or the same comic. The same costume as he does in the Batman as well.
So just...
Oh, yeah, like, this seems to be in the quote-unquote rebirth version of the characters.
And okay, I was about to ask
and
which
I was looking
version.
At it, I was like, when you pulled that comic out earlier with Batman, I was like, huh.
Yep.
That's really... It's so pretty.
The Greg Capullo design suit.
I'm like a 2-year-old with lights, shiny lights.
Sometimes you really just gotta pick up the pretty stuff, right?
That's true. Sometimes things are shiny, and that's what makes them good.
I would, read it.
All right, well, that was a nice positive end to this episode.
Yeah.
For all of our mess.
So, all right, well, with that, let's all say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.